site that you showed us earlier,
yeah.
I presume your newsletter down the middle or articles and so on. Take it to reference all that sort of thing. Your community's on the other side where there's a discussion line.
Right.
And down the other side there are links to other things you
Yeah.
How would you distinguish that site from any other blog?
Oh, yeah. My site's... Yeah. Well, it's older. That's a blob.
The other question I've asked is, you've got one link to a part of it that's a wiki.
Yeah. Why not only, well, because the wiki's only 2 weeks old, and the site's been there since 1995, and wikis hadn't been invented yet. This is sort of, like, I do things my own way, and this part of my site, and it's the link that says news, this is, actually, I call it my newsletter, because, again, the newsletter was around before blogs. But this is the most typical blog-like part of my site, where we have the entries. Now, my stuff isn't dated in reverse chronological order the way a blog is, although, because I don't have the times, but they actually do go up in reverse chronological order, and they have the feel of blog posts. I typically post shorter items than many, if not all, bloggers. Like I told somebody once, I specialize in the 100-word essay. That's my style of writing. And if anybody complains, I tell them to go look up Ludwig Wittgenstein, who's a famous philosopher who wrote in 100-word essays. So this part's kind of like a blog. Like other blogs, it's archived. All of the archives are on my website and so on. You can search through it just like you can any other blog. What makes mine a bit different, the refer, research, reflect links at the end of each post, those are different. A lot of blogs don't have anything like that, although they're beginning to, right? But the refer is to send the item to a friend by email. There's a bit of a bug in it since I did my format change while I was preparing for these talks, and the submit button disappeared in Internet Explorer. I don't know why. Although I will point out, if you just hit enter, it's just the same, but I still get email. The research, as I mentioned before, links into, and this is part of the site that's different. All of my posts are stored in a database, they're stored individually, and they're auto-categorized into one of 100 or so different categories. They're also organized by author and by publisher. Most blogging software does not have a field for author, does not have a field for publisher, but I record the author and the publisher of every link, every site that I link to, because I think that that's important. And then you can find data based on those values. And then the reflect is the direct link into my discussion system. Okay, sorry, you're laughing. It's just killing me. Is it at me? That's all I need to know.
No, I think it's funny that you're
so frustrated with Internet Explorer. Oh, okay. That's cool. That's great, yeah. All right, now I know. You see, I feel better now. I was just checking my pants. And I was wondering if there was ever... Oh. Oh, that's too bad. Well, let me... Well, because this is the first time I've worn these pants. I think they're performing magnificently, but you know, but then there's people in the back row just killing themselves. I'm wondering if I'm having a wardrobe malfunction. Yeah, another day, another mysterious Internet Explorer error. Yeah, I'm not surprised. Well, we've got some tricks for him. He wants to see frustration. Where do you study trigonometry? You'll never use it, but you'll have to take it. Yes, I think trig is just adults' revenge against kids. Older kids, they're teens, they need something to keep them humble, and trigonometry will do that. The reflect button links directly. And again, a lot of blogs have direct links into the comment area. My comment area is a bit more extensive than most. It actually goes back. The posts in the comments area go back practically to before there was blogging again. But so far, I haven't really distinguished my site from a blog. I'm not really inclined to, you know, make a hard and fast thing. I have my blog posts. I also have articles that I create. Stop that. Jeez. Keep trying to click it, and it keeps all of doing is... There we go. And I hate mice with balls on them. If you're buying a mouse, get one of those ones with the little infrared on. Oh, you'll never go back to an old style mouse again. I've worked with the wireless mice, and I'm forever trying to line the thing up. And I find myself, and then I lose the piece. That actually the wireless mouse connects into. And then a wireless mouse is a mouse that requires batteries. And for those of you who have been with me since this morning, batteries means replaceable parts. Replaceable parts, less good technology than technology without replaceable parts. I have the infrared mouse for this laptop. It works. I don't need to put anything into it. I'm away to the races. Anyhow, I do have also... on my site, articles, longer articles. These are actually a separate category from the blog posts. And it may show up, it may not, we don't know. We're back to slow again. I'm sure somebody's out there, you know, like downloading MP3s or something. Oh, well, that would be nice. Oh, they stopped working there. And, yeah, and so now they're hitting the internet. The real difference between my site and blogs... now it's going to come. Well, there's an article. And if we scroll down, I have the comments in the comment form embedded right in the article. But the real difference is at the back end. And we may get into this in reasonable time. I wasn't going to go into there because... it is being so slow and stubborn, and it takes a certain amount of time, but maybe we'll be able to get in a reasonable amount of time, because the interface, now again, I wrote all the software for this site, and I'm not the world's greatest programmer, but one of the advantages of writing your own software is you get exactly what you want, well, to the limit of your coding ability. Pardon? No.
In order to get something that somebody's going to want, you're still probably going to end up having to call the programmer. Full stop. Unless you can write it yourself.
Yeah. So.
You get a basic guess.
So, I don't know what his name is, but learn how to program. it's going to be forever. It's real nice if you can get into it. But basically, my system looks and feels... there we go. On the back end, I have some formatting issues, but it's my back end. And the next page, I'll warn you now, somebody hacked my system a while back. I cleaned it all out, but I left one of the pages. So there's the hack. Just because it's a good reminder. So, yeah, okay. So, and the lesson here is do not disable the administration login feature on your content management system. Because even though you think nobody will find their way in, someone will find their way in and then pretend that they hacked your site. All they did is, right, they walked through the wide open door. It's just, there was no login on my system for a while. I thought, I'll just fly free for a little while and save myself the trouble. But, it took like 2 days for somebody to hack it. They claim they're from France, but we trace the IP. They're from where else? The United States.
So if you had a wiki, though, that person could have done the same thing.
Oh, yes. Yeah, that's why if you do have a wiki, check the recent changes on a regular basis, because people can do that, and from time to time will. Not everybody out there on the internet is nice. And, you can just revert to the previous page. It's very quick to change it, but you do need to sort of keep an eye on it. And don't just sort of let it go off and do its own thing, because otherwise you'll find you're hosting a Wares site or something like that. You know, links to illegal software, or where to find the Madonna videos or whatever. This is a back end. Sorry.
Where go that person put that comment? Is that not in your discussion page?
The one that you just saw there?
Yeah, that page.
No.
Where is that on your website?
Ah, okay. What that is, where that is, here are the, I have on my page, I create and define links, pages, articles, lists, which are mailing lists, sites, which I'm not using at the moment, categories, that's all the regular expressions for my categories that I talked about in the morning session, and then boxes and templates, and where that particular content in is in a template. It's in an admin template for the initial login screen. So, and bloggers don't have access to this fine-grained content. My system is a lot more similar to a content management system, such as Scoop, such as PostNuke, or the other two that I was thinking about and couldn't remember the names of earlier, Plone or Drupal, are also types of content management systems.
When you take the source, that's done.
Sure. Anyhow, so, where was I? Oh, yes. Now, all of these content management systems, including my content management system, have, as I said before the break, the capacity to allow users to very easily create fine-grained content. And my system actually creates more fine-grained content than these other systems do, more types of content. And for those of you who are into RSS and looking ahead, where that technology is going to go is in different types of content, very application-specific content, like RSS calendar. I'm going to put a calendar entry there. I'll put it between link and page or whatever, just add calendar entry. I have another version of the software that allows me to add a poll using the same sort of mechanism. So they all allow you to input content very simply, and you should also have noticed that all of the content that gets input has properties in common, some very simple properties, with a little pushing and pulling, but we don't worry about pushing and pulling. And basically, any of these sites that you've seen, there will be a site title, right, and there will be a site homepage, or I'll call it link. And typically, you would describe that site. And after that, there's a series of zero or more separate posts or items. And so we have an item. And for all the different systems, the items all had a similar structure as well, right? The item would have a title. The item would have a link. The item would have a description. And there might be, there usually are, I said zero or more, usually it's more, there might be several items.
That's
This is a common structure that we can use to describe news websites, such as are created by Scoop, content management type sites, such as created by PostNuke, wiki content, blog content, and indeed the content of my own newsletter. And this basic structure here, if you follow, if you understand this structure here, you understand RSS. Because this is RSS. Nice one. If a RSS is an XML file, and all that means is you put your field names in little angle brackets. An XML file that contains these fields. So I'll put a little RSS at the top, and lo and behold, we have an RSS file. And the little, you know, it's XML, so it's going to be syntactically a little pickier than that. If you want to get the exact details on how to create an RSS file from scratch, you can have a look at my paper, How to Create an RSS Feed with Notepad, a Web Server, and a Beer. So just look up Downs, RSS, and Beer in Google, and you'll get that article probably first hit, because I don't know anyone else writing about those topics. Well, the neat thing about RSS is that because it's in XML, it's machine readable. By machine readable, what I mean is that a remote program that somebody else authored can take the content of this and do stuff with it.
What sort of stuff?
Let's go all the way back to here. Now we're going to zip into a site called BlogLines. What BlogLines is a site that allows you to create an account and then, as a user on the site, subscribe to one or more RSS feeds. By subscribe, what that means is BlogLines will check an RSS file every once in a while. I've determined that it's once an hour because I've got some stuff set up. So it'll check this site, and it'll read the contents of this site, and it'll display it for you. So I've set up an account here on BlogLines. I'm going to log in. Yes, yet another username and password. I get so tired of logging in. So that's got to change one day. Janice and people have left the building. I don't know about Janice because
it's just a web page.
I don't even know what Janice is written in.
It's just a web page.
It's written in C. ASP? ASP? Are you serious? Yeah. I can see why people thought it was Internet Explorer specific if it's written in ASP. Yeah. Okay. If I was creating an LMS from scratch, I can say this because Chris isn't here and she won't shoot me, I would not write it in ASP. I really wouldn't. RSS stands for, originally it stood for Rich Site Summary. It's an XML format that was created in 1997 or so. 97? Yeah. By a company called Netscape, which you may have heard of. It no longer exists. And this happened when Netscape was competing against Internet Explorer, and part of their business strategy was to create the Netscape website as a destination site for users. They called it NetCenter. And what NetCenter was supposed to be, it was a web page that would have information coming from all kinds of different sources. And so they came up with this RSS format, that people who provided this information could use in order to input content into NetCenter. And that's where RSS began. I know all about that because I was NetCenter feed number 51. It was my website. It was one of the very few non-commercial sites to be putting RSS feeds into NetCenter. More recently, people have come up with other names for it. There's a version of RSS called RSS 1.0, which is in RDF, which is a language, a type of XML being supported by the World Wide Web Consortium. And so some people call RSS RDF site summary. It's a very obscure usage. Other people who are trying to popularize RSS are saying now that it stands for really simple syndication. I don't like that name because it's not historically accurate at all. But rich site summary is if somebody says what's it stand for, you can't really go wrong saying rich site summary. It's so characteristic of the RSS world, though, that there would not be agreement in the community about what RSS stands for. That's typical. So, there's the RSS file. Actually, I can show you an RSS file. I don't know what this is going to open up for me, it being Internet Explorer. If this was Firefox, it would just display the file. That's what happens, yeah. Exactly. You've nailed it exactly. That's what happens. You write the RSS file either using a piece of software. It's just not going to load. Who knows why. Using a piece of software or doing it by hand, and then another program comes in and reads, or as the language, the terminology says, parses the XML file, and then does whatever it wants with the data, either stores it in the database or renders it on a page or so on. Here's an RSS file. This RSS file is for OL Daily, my daily newsletter. I'm just curious. How many of you subscribe to my newsletter? Oh, shocking. I do have a newsletter. You can subscribe to it through email if you wish, or you can go to BlogLines, and we'll come back to that in a sec. But here's the file that BlogLines is reading. This file is generated by this my content editing system that you just saw, and here's what it looks like. And as you can see, here's the angle brackets for an item, and then the title of the item, the link of the item, the description of the item. All of the software that I've looked at so far, the wiki software, the web logging software such as Blogger, the content management systems such as PostNuke, they all generate RSS feeds. And even more importantly, they all do it automatically. You, as the user of this software, do not need to think about RSS feeds at all. Well, a little bit. In Blogger, I think you actually have to turn it on. But mostly, you just don't worry about it. The system does it for you and produces these files for you. So you never see this squiggly stuff here. It doesn't come up. At the other end of the pipe, a service like BlogLines reads these and then presents them. Well, you can sign up for individual RSS feeds. And if you've signed up for an RSS feed, as you can see, I've signed up for a bunch of RSS feeds here on this side. And then BlogLines will allow you to read the contents. Here is my newsletter as rendered by BlogLines. So the RSS file that you just saw has been made nice and pretty by BlogLines, and you can very easily read my newsletter. Now, there was a question earlier on today, how do you find RSS feeds? If you were to create an account in BlogLines, BlogLines will make suggestions for you. Now, what I did is, the first thing I did is, first thing I did is create a blog, and then I went to BlogLines and subscribed to my own blog. Why? Well, I'm like that. But what's kind of neat is BlogLines looks at what I've already subscribed to and then suggests related material. That's a really neat idea. And so BlogLines will make recommendations. So I'll just click down here. And so it's recommending Wired News, quotes of it. I don't know why it's recommending quotes of the day. And it's recommending my own blog once again, which figures, and so on and so forth. A lot of good sites in here. So something like BlogLines is a really good way to find new RSS feeds, new blogs that you can read on a topic that you're interested in.
So what you're saying is, if we're working with some students and we want to see them to do some research, they can create a blog with their keywords.
Well, I wouldn't, very close. I wouldn't depend on BlogLine's recommendations pointing you to the student blogs that simply. But you know what the student blog addresses are, right? And in BlogLine's, you can also subscribe somewhere. I have to find it now. I've forgotten where it is.
Is that the one second from the bottom on the left hand side?
Could be. No, this one?
Subscribe right down. Yeah, that one.
Easy subscribe bookmark. No, that's not it. I'm sorry. I just can't find it here. Just off the top of my. Yeah, I'll bet you that's it. Anyhow, somewhere on here. I'm not going to search for it while standing in front of people because it's not going to work. Did you find it? Who puts stuff in yellow text? Some people can't read yellow text. Man. Yeah, that's probably it, except that turns out not to be a link. Whatever. Anyhow. There is a place in BlogLines, and they move these things around too, that they haven't learned from Google. Keep it simple. And don't keep changing your interface, because people forget, like me. Anyhow, if you know the address of the RSS files being created by your students, and you probably will, almost certainly will, right? Then in BlogLines, you simply put that address into the form and click subscribe, and it's in there somewhere. You can find it. You'll be more easily able to find it than I can right now on the fly like this. And so what you would do is you subscribe using BlogLines to all your students' blogs. This is, and people, instructors have done this, this is an incredibly easy way to keep track of the students' work, because if we go back to the page where I was, you see on the side there all the lists, so you have all the list of your student blogs. If there's new content, it'll boldface the title of the blog. That's very common for blog reading software. You can also get blog reading software that you install as a desktop application. For example, Amphetadesk or NewsGator are applications that read RSS feeds, and they will do much the same thing. They will tell you if one of your feeds has updated. And then you just click on it, click on whatever your link was, and you're reading your updated feed. And here we are, reading this stuff. One of the neat things that I did, because I do things like this because they're fun, I subscribe to various email lists. And I'm sure you're all familiar with mailing lists, right? And they're a pain in the neck to use these days because you have to filter through the spam. And if you sign up to a list that has any traffic, at all, you find yourself, you know, the email, and if you have to go through the ultimate horror of using Microsoft Outlook to read your email, you know how long it takes for each email to come up, and you read it, you delete it, and it goes through this agonizing process. I use an open source product called Thunderbird to read my email. It's made by the same people who make Firefox, so it's free, open source, and so on. And your administrator will tell you that it doesn't work with Microsoft Exchange. If your administrator says that, they are lying. I use, National Research Council has standardized on the Exchange server, Microsoft Exchange, got to use it, blah, blah, blah. I use Thunderbird, I've signed in. I've signed in on Exchange using Thunderbird. So it can be done. And it works fine. And it doesn't send all these messages back and forth that Outlook does. All it does is, when you log on, it gets the headers. And when you decide to read a message, and only then, it sends you the message. So much more logical. Anyhow, email. All of these mailing lists, what I did is, I found the web page where the mailing list keeps its archive. I wrote a little program that retrieves the contents of that page and looks for new content. This is a process called scraping. And then I took that content and organized it so that the output was an RSS file. I put that RSS file on my website, and then I told Bloglines about it. Bloglines thinks it's an RSS file, I harvest it. Here is, I don't know, are any of you familiar with DOS-L? It's a very popular mailing list, distance education online symposium, based in the United States. And so this is a mailing list, and this is something I've converted into an RSS feed. Now compare this to keeping up with a mailing list as opposed to using your email program. Even Thunderbird, much easier. Check this out. Here's the stuff that came in on DOS over the last day or so. Right. That's me keeping up with my mailing list. It's that easy. And there's another one in here I did for IT Forum. And then somebody finally sent me the address to the IFETS mailing list, which is another educational technology mailing list. I'm going to do the same thing. I'll just write a little piece of software, grabs the site, scrapes it. It's not complex software to write, and then produces an RSS feed. And eventually, I'll be reading all of my mailing lists by RSS, because it takes me like a tenth of the time to do it that way. That's the convenience of RSS. It's so much faster and simpler to use than email. And email's in trouble. RSS is going to replace email in some way, shape, or form. Guaranteed. Put it in the bank. So if you've invested in email software, sell. That was not to be construed as stock market advice. Go. No problem. Written stuff on.
Have you written that?
This?
Yeah. Or is that straight out of the.
This is generated completely automatically. I don't do anything to make this work. Actually, I'm even sneakier than I just described. What my software does is it goes, it looks at the message headers, grabs that list. Then it goes, it checks each email message, parses the message headers and all of that in the email message, extracts the data, and creates a little summary of the message as well as the author information and the date, and then assembles all of that into the RSS field. So, it took me an afternoon. It's a hack, but it works nice.
Would you just describe how you did that again? Just
went a little bit faster. Oh, okay. Okay. For any mailing list,
yeah.
Okay, well, not any mailing list, but for many mailing lists, they will create an archive on a web page. My program finds that archive. and gets a list of the email messages that have been recently posted. Then what the program does is it reads each one of those email messages off of the archive website. And it looks at the information. Now, email is presented in a very standard format. And so what it does is it looks at the content of the email and extracts from that email the important data, like the title of the email, which would be the subject header, right? The author of the email or the sender, and also the first little bit of the email that creates the summary. And it takes that information and it formats it into an RSS file. And then it publishes that RSS file to my website. And it does all of that completely automatically. Now, and then I've told BlogLines about that RSS file. So you could go to BlogLines and subscribe to DOS-L or to IT Forum. Actually, I found it started recommending these feeds to other people. So there's probably many more readers even now. And read the mailing list as though it were an RSS feed, right in BlogLines. No problem. Next. Well, we've got data in XML format that we can harvest. This is going to take forever to go back, isn't it? Let's go back this way. There's another site out there. Actually, I'm probably not going to get any joy from this link, so I'll express my frustration now and be done with it. This is a website called Technorati. Well, it will be eventually. What Technorati does is it harvests all the RSS feeds that it knows about. It harvests quite literally millions of RSS feeds. Brings it all together into a big database, and then makes that database available for people to search. And it's not going to show up. Now, the problem with Technorati is it's a little flaky. You take the flakiness of Technorati, and you take the bandwidth that we've got here, and we might not actually see it, which is unfortunate. Maybe Feedster will be better. Feedster does the same thing. Yeah, it says it. You believe that little bar on the Internet Explorer? That little bar is an animated GIF. That's not indicating progress. It's a MacGuffin. It distracts your attention while you're waiting for the website to load, because usability studies have shown that if something is moving on the screen, you're much more likely to wait for it to appear than if nothing is moving on the screen. So they put something moving on the screen that bears no relation whatsoever to the actual progress of the operation in question. How do I know this? I've made that little bar move in cases where there is no content on the page that is supposed to be downloading. Here's Feedster. Feedster is a cool site. Does the same thing as Technorati. Harvest is the word that means reads and stores, goes out and gathers RSS feeds from around the world, puts them in a big database, and I can search on that database. And of course, when I search on these databases, I search for myself. What else would I search for? Why do I do that, you ask? Well, because people who link to me are most likely to have stuff that I'm interested in on their website. Ask how we discover blogs. This is a great way to discover blogs. And so, now Feedster isn't as good as Technorati, because Feedster harvests EduRSS, which I'll talk about in a couple of minutes, and unfortunately thinks that anything that comes out of that site has to do with me, but it's just my name and the URL. So I have to sort of skim through and look for actual good links. That's why I went to Technorati first. The results are actually better than in Feedster. So, but anyways, let's pretend that these are all about stuff that I wrote, even though they're not. And then I just pick
any link? I'm trying to find a link that might be actually good. Oh, there's a link to Metz. I haven't seen a link to Metz for a long time. Communist powers, okay.
I'll follow this link, because Darcy Norman actually does link to my stuff on a regular basis. No. So I followed the link in Feedster. Here's somebody else's website. He's on the warpath against comment spammers. But those are, you know, people... The problem with software like Movable Type or Blogger or any one of these things is it's very easy to figure out how to send a message to it using a piece of software. So people write software that sends the same message to every blog that exists. These people are called comment spammers. They're just like email spammers. And they're just as insidious and hard to get rid of.
So here we have his comment about comment spammers and so on and so forth.
So by following Feedster's search for me, I can find this weblog. This weblog will contain other stuff that I'm interested in. I can follow that. I can also see who's writing about the stuff that I'm writing about or who's interested in the same thing as me. Pretty simple concept once we get off the ground. Now, I've played around with this, and I've created a service.
Is this it? Yeah.
That's called EduRSS. EduRSS is the same concept. EduRSS harvests RSS file, puts them in a database. The difference between EduRSS and Technorati or Feedster is I'm a lot more picky. And I harvest only about 300 or so RSS feeds on the very specific topic of education and technology and related items. The reason why I do that is, first of all, I don't have the computer power to harvest everything. But secondly, I don't want everything. All I want to harvest is stuff that has to do with our field specifically. That gives me a database where when you do a search, the search results are much more likely to be on topic. Guaranteed to be more likely to be on topic because words within a specific domain have a fixed meaning and they don't have the multiple meanings that they will have across domains. This is the first stage of what might be called the filtering process. And I think we're going to see a lot more of it. I know we're going to see a lot more of this, where people, instead of harvesting everything, they harvest just a few feeds that are relevant to their own domain of studies, and they bring them together into something like EduRSS. Now that I have EduRSS, I've got this wonderful tool I can play with. One of the things EduRSS does is it creates a web page with all the recent listings. So, here it is. Here is EduRSS for today, and the links that you see are the items that were published somewhere online and in the 300 or so blogs that I harvest in our field. And there'll be 100, 200 items today. It's a very busy field. And just as an aside, I'm constantly culling, and it's like bonsai. Where you're culling and trimming your list and adding a thing and taking a thing off. All I do to make EduRSS work is pick the sites I want it to harvest. So I'm very, very meticulous about picking the sites and getting just the right combination of sites. I've got a bit too much now. I need to trim it a little bit. My bonsai is getting bushy. But this is the stuff in our field that was produced today. And it was all produced today and harvested by EduRSS. But there's a lot of stuff there, isn't there? Take a look at this. Look at all this. La-di-da-di-da. Nobody's interested. Well, I'm interested in all of that, but pretty well nobody else is. You can also subscribe to EduRSS as an RSS feed. I've created an RSS feed that outputs this page, basically. So if you wanted to read this not on my website, you could read it in blog lines. Problem is, you still have all of those links. So I took it a step further. And the step further that I took is I created a thing called EduRSS Topics. And now we're moving beyond what's happening out there elsewhere in the field. So there are no technorates or feasters or things like that that are doing quite this. What EduRSS topics is, remember how I talked about the categories that I have on my website that are created out of regular expressions. Well, I take the same categories and I apply them to the data that's coming in as RSS. And so the content comes in, it gets looked at, and then it gets distributed in a set of categories. Here are the categories I have on EduRSS. And we go everywhere from academic journals, Blackboard, to Collis, to DRM, there's one for Edna, so on and so forth. You see, and this is why I filter the sites. If I tried to do a search for Edna on Technorati, who knows what I'd get, right? I'd get Edna Krabappel and The Simpsons. I'd get, I don't know, I can't think of Edna's off the top of my head that I know, but you know what I mean. I'd get everything but the Educational Network Australia. On my system, on EduRSS, Edna can be pretty well counted on to have a single meaning, and that's Edna, the one here in Australia. So, let's see if I can find it. Probably be under E, wouldn't it? Yeah, there it is. So, here is the output from EduRSS topics for Edna. If you are following Edna, think about this. If you are interested in Edna, I harvest 300 or so educational technology sites. So basically, if it happens, I harvest it in our field. And then I filter it using regular expressions, so I have a good filtering, and then I produce it on an Edna-specific field. If you are following Edna, this is your source of information. This is actually a better source of information than Edna, about Edna. Because it includes not only the stuff that Edna sends out, but it includes any discussion, press releases, etc., etc., by other people about Edna. Merlot is a project in the United States that's very similar to Edna, and they've signed deals recently with Blackboard and with WebCT for content, special content arrangements. Merlot didn't bother to put any of this on its own website or anything. They didn't tell anybody. I found out about it because EduRSS harvests the press releases from Blackboard and WebCT. And so that's how I got information about these deals that Merlot was doing. There are other people who do email lists like Hello Daily out there, but they missed that because they look at news about Merlot on the Merlot site, where I gather it and put it into the single category like this. So here's Edna, so on and so forth. So I output that in HTML, but I also output that in, of course, RSS. So if you went to blog lines, or if you searched on Technorati, or if you had one of these headline readers, you could actually subscribe to a feed that aggregates and filters all of these websites and gives you information specifically about Edna or specifically about learning objects. So they're very highly directed feeds. So you might be wondering, you should be wondering, why aren't you wondering? What does all of this have to do with learning objects? Well, I did exactly the same thing for learning objects. Of course! Why wouldn't I? Learning objects have metadata. I don't have this big, huge, stupid, cumbersome system of metadata with 87 fields and all of that, but as it turns out, according to a study by Norm Friesen, nobody uses them all anyways, and really, what's being produced in the way of metadata for learning objects amounts to pretty much the same as RSS. I harvest for them all, but really that's about what they use. And it's really hard to get people who produce learning objects to actually publish their metadata. I don't know why. It's like, you know, they don't want to advertise that they have these resources available, or they don't want anybody, they certainly don't want me to get them and criticize them like I do stuff in the world daily. But, still, nonetheless, and we'll back up a little bit. Whoops, too far. Nonetheless, I created a site called DLORN, Distributed Learning Object Repository Network. Now, what this site is an EduRSS for learning objects. And I did a bunch of door knocking and arm twisting, and at the Merlot conference in Vancouver last year, I actually got up in one of the sessions, marched up to the front of the room, and the director of Merlot was standing there, and I said, "Why aren't you producing RSS feeds? What is the big secret?" And a week later, they had RSS feeds. And I'm very proud of myself, even convinced Edna to produce RSS feeds for their stuff. This is a known error, don't panic. And I keep it a deep secret because I have a typo in my link. Here we go. Is that still going to work? Yeah, it's going to work. So, there are various content repositories out there eventually that we will see eventually here. So Merlot, Edna, Cario is another one, Hamble in Germany is another one, and there are a bunch more, we'll see them. And every time they add new learning objects to their repository, they add it to their RSS file. And I collect this, and eventually we'll see this. This is so frustrating. Anyhow. So, I want you to think about what's happening here, because I am dead sure that the organizations like Edna, and I'll be talking to Edna in a week and a half or so, and putting this on the table, although it's not like I haven't before, and Merlot and the rest of them, I'm sure they're not thinking this through. Quite the way that I'm thinking this through. I'm sure they're thinking it through. They're just doing it differently. Which, I guess, is not the same as not thinking it through, is it? So, here are the original producers of resources. And these might be blogs. Is this still loading? I can't believe it. I blame Internet Explorer. Okay, might be blogs, might be colleges or universities that are producing learning objects or whatever. Importantly, they're using tools like blogging software or maybe wikis or the content management system. And hopefully, they're using something that was free and open source, so they're not spending money they don't have to on software. But more significantly, their software is generating all of their metadata for them. They don't tag anything. All they do is produce resources. And they use these tools, and these tools are coming more and more and more. And then somebody like me comes along and harvests them. They probably not all of them, because that's the first layer of filtering, is the selection of the site that I'm going to harvest from. Here's what DLORN harvests from. As you can see, the learning object community is trailing the RSS community badly, but we'll leave that aside. And it's funny because RSS, no organization, no funding, no standards body. It's not part of XML as recognized by the World Wide Web Consortium. It's a completely volunteer grassroots effort. They can't even agree on the name. And it's by far and away the most successful part of the semantic web, by orders of magnitude. Anyhow, so they're University of Toronto, I'm picking up from Global Education, Maricopa, Edna, so on and so forth. Now, the first layer of filtering is in the selection of sources. That helps me have a focus. It makes my searches better. And I aggregate them. And then the second layer of filtering is with my irregular expressions. And I output them as topic-specific feeds. So I'll have a bunch of feeds out. And then people pick them up. So here they are picking them up.
and that's the network. That's the distributed learning object repository network. Except, I don't expect, nor do I want, ever, to be the only person harvesting, categorizing, and distributing. There should be others. I want there to be others. So if somebody else, the people at the Bath University have picked up my software, and other people have talked about it, somebody else does the same thing using any sort of aggregator software that they want, they can do the same thing. And they will filter the material their own way. And they might not pick the same sources I will. They'll pick their own sources. And they'll produce their own topic-specific feeds. And these topic feeds will be read by some people, not read by other people. And there they are. And this, more accurately, is the structure of the Distributed Learning Object Repository Network.
This is, in the most classic sense of the word, a network. And it will, guaranteed, exhibit network properties. These properties are now well studied and well understood, both in the field of computer science under the heading of connectionism and in the field of mathematics under the heading of graph theory. We know what will happen.
This is what they call a classic neural network structure. And the neural network structure will have the property of being self-organizing. It will cluster. It will do things on its own. Particularly, and I didn't talk about it in this session, which is really unfortunate, but who has time? If you read any of the stuff that I've written about the quality of learning objects, the evaluation of learning objects, that involves the same network sending signals back through the network. You might ask, how do you send a signal back through a network like this? But if you look in Google under the heading, the general heading of what is known as recommender systems, the mechanics of that are well understood and well explained. But really, think about it just in practical terms. You're sitting here, you're reading some sort of learning object or some sort of blog post or whatever, and the site that's provided you access to this, or the service that's provided you access to this, has put a little thing at the bottom of the screen, rate this item. And then you send the signal back. Now, we can be more or less nuanced on this. We did a project for a company called Mosaic where we looked at the different dimensions for the rating of the quality of learning objects, and it got all complicated and deep and so on. Me, I just like the 1 to 10 scale, or you know, with something like this, because the organization is so important. I might just have a thing that says on topic, off topic, and you just pick, right? And then that'll help the filtering mechanism. But the main point is, you, the user at the end, are sending information back into the system. And as that goes back, that helps this structure organize itself. I've only depicted three layers here, but as you can see, if you think about this, if we have three layers, we can have more layers, and we will have more layers, and so the organization will, over time, become quite a bit more nuanced. So, that's the structure of learning toward which we're heading. You may hear me from time to time, especially if you start subscribing to the newsletter. If you don't subscribe to the newsletter, you might not hear it so much, but that's okay. If we look at the organization of learning object repositories today, and the things that Edna and the Learning Federation, and in my country, Industry Canada, and EduSource, and them are setting up, what they're trying to do is make it so you have to come to them for the metadata. You individually come to them for the metadata. There is no network. You just go directly to them, like that. And when you're searching for metadata, you're only searching here. Or maybe if we're lucky, you're only searching here. Basically, The mechanism known as federated search breaks this network. And it breaks this network specifically by locking down certain parts of it. The analogy, this is very similar to the way your brain works, but imagine that parts of your brain could not be accessed by other parts of your brain for whatever reason. We have names for that. We say that's a disease, right? It's like Alzheimer's. The connections are being broken. And I use the word Alzheimer's a bit loosely here, but if we think of knowledge, insofar as knowledge is a social phenomenon, and knowledge certainly does have a social dimension, where our knowledge of how to do things, like, let's say, build a bridge or build a city, are something that's known as by society and not by any individual, then our knowledge is being broken when access to major important elements of our knowledge is blocked. And the federated system blocks this. It prevents the harvest of these materials. That's why I had so much trouble with Merlot and Edna. They don't want people harvesting. They want people going there. But only in the harvesting, only in the pulling together of information from multiple sources and treating it, massaging it, as the slogan is, harvest and then repurpose and remix. We alter the information, we remix the information, and then we feed the information forward. That's how something like this works. Also, in a system where the metadata never leaves the original repository, where the metadata is locked down, our evaluative metadata never gets back to the source. The evaluation cannot be associated with the object. Because if I say, this is a terrible object, well, the people who authored the object, they're not going to put that in there with their metadata, are they? Especially, people are talking about commercial networks. Well, like somebody's trying to sell you a learning object, they're not going to include all of the really bad criticisms of it, even if it is really bad. That's why they want to lock this down, because they want to control the message. They want to control the access to the material so that you don't go looking around at the competition. And they want to control what people say about the resource. They don't want to hear all the reviews, because the only review that matters to them is their own. That's the only publicity that they want associated with their object. The only way around this is, at the very least, to have free and open metadata. And I would argue further, since knowledge is a social value and a social good, the only way around this is to have free and open educational content. This is the mechanism. This will be the mechanism. And this is, I'm not going to pull a Hegelian historical inevitability on you. I'm not going to say, this is guaranteed to happen, because there are lots of things that are not, that could intervene. They get at the legislators, they write laws, so on and so forth. But all other things being equal, this is where the semantic web is headed, is this kind of structure. And if we get this kind of structure, we have a tool that's very, very powerful. Those of you in the morning, I was talking about the organization of learning and recommending, I just erased it. Remember the star pattern that I put, right, instead of the linear pattern? Take that star pattern, turn it on its side. Here's the star, right here. The points in the star are the output from this neural network. That's how you get your access to your resources. That's how you get people going back to the discussion list on a certain topic. Now, this is non-linear, right? So you might be asking, what goes here? This now is the domain of what people like Prensky or Papert are calling learning games, or what I style more generally as a learning environment. This is where all the work happens. This is an open-ended space, online space, shared by multiple users who are performing authentic tasks, and where through the resources of this self-organizing network, and we see that it really will be a self-organizing network now, and it's not just kind of some kind of airy-fairy, maybe one day thing, but it really does happen, and will happen in our field. Put resources, educational resources, learning objects, widely construed, into the environment in the appropriate place, and they go off into the environment where the users, that is to say the students, they don't take these learning environments, they don't study these learning environments. These learning environments are bits of multimedia, they're bits of content, and they become the vocabulary, the words used by the learners in this environment as they perform these authentic tasks, and they are reformed, reshaped, and used by the learners to express themselves in this area. And I put a lot into that last sentence, and I put a whole theory of multimedia language into that last sentence. But I have explained that theory of multimedia language elsewhere, but I wanted to pull that to that conclusion. This is where it's going. This isn't some sort of, gee, I really think it would be nice if this is the case. This is where it's going. I know that it is where it's going rather than it simply should be, because I know these objects already exist. And people, especially the younger generation, are already using these things as the new language. That's what photo blogs are. The little photos are these things floating around in the ether here. I know that that network exists because I built one. I know that the technology exists for the feed forward of the information, and also the recommender system at the back, because I built that too. So the only thing that's waiting is two things. First thing is for it to grow, and it will grow. It will grow slowly, because these things grow slowly. But I'm a philosopher. I've got centuries. I'm not worried. And the other thing is, you know, there will be diseases. And, you know, maybe we'll survive these diseases, maybe we won't. But there's a lot of people, an awful lot of people, advocating and working very hard for open source software, open education, open metadata. And what they're arguing for, what they're lobbying for, is not so that we can get free software. Nobody cares about the free software. What they want is this, or something like this. They want the capacity, the empowerment on both the individual and the social level that this produces for us. Because this can mostly automatically educate the world. And it completely reshapes the roles of teachers. It completely reshapes the roles of what we used to call instructional designers. But this could do the job for us. And that is what I'm all about. And that's my talk. Comments? Questions?
I think we're gobsmacked. Just the notion of sort of this conspiracy theory sort of feel to these sorts of things, and whether I'm just wondering whether the desire to do that cataloguing and the notion that is to have things like a metadata embedded is very much like an old library system, or the system of sticking things in folders and organizing things with a different mindset to the one that says, well, in this world, why are you bother sticking anything in folders? Because you just use your search engine capacity and improve the search engines, by all means, but you've got it at your fingertips, you know. I'm the biggest convert to that now. I use Google, and it gets me pretty much what I want fairly well. With what you suggested with this RSS, it's a refinement of that to start drawing, improving the search capacity to deliver you with what you need straight away. So I'm just wondering to what extent there are people who just don't get it, and they're still filing things in a way, because that's the way they could order the bit of the world that they understood.
Right now, the majority of people are still in that world. The vast majority. I work in these learning object circles, and I know these people, and right now I'm the outsider, by far and away. Almost nobody agrees with me. There are people who agree with me, and people like Darcy Lamb, Brian Lamb, Darcy Norman, Alan Levine, David Carter Todd is along for the ride. I could list a bunch of them off the top of my head who do agree, but they're all young. They have no power. They pretty much have no income. As far as the establishment is concerned, and I'm not putting up the capital E, big C conspiracy, because there's no conspiracy, but, it's... You organize things the way you were taught and the way you grew up. And so, of course, you would organize things by category. But, all of these national organizations, all of the learning management systems, IEEE, WC3 even for that matter, believe it or not, certainly IMS and EDUCAUSE, EDNA, Learning Federation, all of these people are managed and staffed by... All of these organizations are managed and staffed by people who are working in that other paradigm. And they're doing a lot of good and interesting work, but it's still slice and dice to them. And it's the wrong picture. And it's not like they're organizing in order to crush this. Now, I'll be careful. There are some people who are organizing to crush this. And I could name them off the top of my head. I won't, because I don't want to be sued. But mostly, it's just either they don't see it, they don't believe it. Lots of people very genuinely don't agree with me on this, and that's cool. I have no problem with that. Or it's more comfortable, it's safer. Nobody ever got fired, goes the slogan, for organizing the content into categories, right? We have government committees that get awards, and the content is of the committees is, how are we going to organize this data? And it's like the sign. And the sign shouldn't be organized. The sign should tell me what I want to know. And how does the sign tell me what I want to know? Well, it's somehow going to have to listen to me. And
I think there's a lot of people who are pathway beat. I mean, we know that there are people in this end, if you listen to Ron Oliver and Jan Herrington and Barry Harper coming out of the university sector, who are talking about authentic learning environments and authentic tasks, then we've got people who are thinking bits of stuff, but Stephen's the only one I know, other than the guys that you've named, that have actually looked at it from a different paradigm. And I don't know myself yet. I grasp bits of it.
And I'm not doing the sales job either. You don't have to believe this. Just give me the open education, open access, and as far as I'm concerned, everything else will sort itself out. If I have any message at all, it's that, promote open access, promote open education, use free materials, stop paying for journals, and start putting your own journals and articles online in a freely accessible archive. There's a whole, and I didn't mention it in this talk, there's a whole open archives initiative out there that's doing exactly the same thing as this for academic journal articles and the Public Library of Science and DSpace and all of that. All of that's doing the same thing. And the neat thing is it will all be part of the same system. The whole IMS model is educational content is all by itself in this neat little box. But the harvesting method will allow us to pick and choose from materials from all the stuff that has ever been created anywhere, including weather reports, including statistical data, including sports scores. I don't know how that would be relevant, but somebody might want it for an educational program somewhere, and if they want it, it'll be part of the system. I do it. No. What I do is the thing with these archives is that they're output by programs like Listserv, which means that you can count on each email item being output in a more or less standard way. And so what I do is I look at the actual source code for these archived emails, and then I identify strings that I can recognize as delimiters of significant content. So, and then because the software is highly configurable, I actually have to hard code those delimiters into my software in order to find the particular content that I'm looking for. In theory, there could be a scraper for Listserv that that doesn't need to have all of these things hard coded, but I just haven't done that yet. Could be done.
Thank you, Stephen. I'm going to have to call this up. I can't thank you enough for coming to Queensland and for giving us the opportunity to think in a different way, to hear different things to the things that we normally hear. And the next opportunity we'll get to hear and see Stephen is Networking 2004, because he will be a presenter at the meeting. So keep an eye open for that. And I'd like you to accept, on behalf of all of the Queensland people that have come to see you, something for you to remember.
Thank you. It's a part of Queensland. Thank you very much.
The other thing I have to do is to say that this doesn't happen without the help of other people. And Stephen coming to Queensland has been the result of not just things that I've done, but things that the Flexible Learning Leaders have done in terms of promotion and organisation. And one Flexible Learning Leader who's done all the donkey work here in Cairns for them has been Martha, and I'd really like to thank her today for thank you.
And thanks a lot for having me, too. The welcome here has been just absolutely spectacular, and it was my first chance to talk to a bird.
And before you go, I want to photograph.